Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Wichita, Kansas, attended Wichita State University on a baseball scholarship, and was signed by the Florida Marlins in 99. Two career-threatening elbow surgeries led him to surrender his career and life to God. He was traded to the Detroit Tigers in 2003, and in June of 2006 started the Tigers' gum time tradition. He pitched 5 shutout innings against the Oakland A's in Game 1 of the ALCS sweep. He's number 29, Nate Robertson. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to number 29, the Tigers' left-handed starting pitcher, Nate Robertson. Nate, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, sir. Thanks for having me.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your mom and dad?
Well, how much do you want to know there, Jack? I have 3 brothers. Again, I was born and raised in Wichita, Kansas, and fortunate enough to have 2 loving parents that are still together, really in an era where that doesn't happen too often. We always understood that they loved us. We didn't have a whole lot. Matter of fact, out of the 4 brothers, there was 3 of us that were born close together. The other one came 10 years after number 3. So we all shared, you know, the same bedroom together growing up in this really small house. But we always appreciated what we did have. We never really, I think that was, you know, we credit that to our parents and understanding how to be content instead of living in a life of want. But once again, you know, very fortunate to have a family as close as we've had, and we've stayed that way through the years.
What did your dad do, and what did you learn from your dad?
Well, my dad was, for the most part, you know, he worked some odd jobs, spent 23 years in the Army, and we just, you know, we always looked to him, obviously, for guidance and leadership. He was very much a disciplinarian, but we look back now and we understand that that the discipline was associated with how much he loved us as well. He disciplined us because he loved us, and so that was in an area where I believe that most kids need sharpening. He was very good at keeping us in line.
What'd you learn from your mom?
Well, she was always the big supporter. She came. My dad was big on having her stay home with us as we grew up to be our mother, live at home mother. And yeah, we sacrificed an extra income and maybe nicer things, but we actually received more by having her home than what we would have by having her bring home an income as well.
What sports did you play in high school?
Played baseball, obviously. although there are stories of people that didn't play baseball and ended up doing it at a bigger stage. Played football and basketball, and really enjoyed staying active throughout the year. It doesn't necessarily mean I was good at all 3 sports, but enjoyed doing it. Football was quite the rush, but I didn't have a future there. I might have been able to go play at a junior college level, but I wouldn't have gone much further than that. And basketball, I couldn't jump, so it really didn't matter.
Could you shoot?
You know, I lost my confidence in my shot. They actually got to a point where they told me to quit shooting, just rebound.
What's the toughest sport to play, Nate, and why?
Well, I have to say baseball. I think I share this opinion with others, in the simple fact, of course, you know, it's a biased answer, but yeah, I don't know of too many other sports where an individual can go out and fail 7 out of 10 times and be called successful. You know, the major league hitters that hit 300 are the good ones, the really good ones.
The great ones. Huh?
Yeah. And, you know, they're going out and people don't really think about how they don't get it done 7 times out of 10. And yet, you know, they get paid to be successful 3 out of 10 times. And so it is a very difficult sport. And I think that's why, you know, so many of us are drawn to it, because you try to, you know, overcome, you know, the adversity and all the difficulties that come along with the game. And the game, you'll never figure the game out. You'll never be able to figure the game out.
You went to Wichita State University. You played there. Talk about your career in college.
Well, the funny thing, I didn't really have much of a good career in college. I was there for 4 years. Unfortunately, I'm very close to getting my college degree, and I promised my dad I'd do that, finish that someday, and I will. I actually, my freshman year there at Wichita State, I broke my foot, so I had to medical redshirt. The following season, I had my initial tear in my elbow that led to my first surgery, which I had in my sophomore summer. So then my junior year in the spring, I missed all of that season as well, recovering from the surgery. And then my first actual full season came in my fourth year at Wichita State, and it was good enough to get me drafted and going professionally.
The Florida Marlins drafted you in 99 in round 5 of the draft. What was that like when you heard they drafted you?
Well, you know, it's there, every boy has a dream that, well, I don't want to speak for everybody, but to have a dream, when you play the game, you have a dream of, you know, maybe one day getting to the big leagues, and that's the first step. And it was a dream realized at the time, and it led on to bigger and better things.
We're talking to Nate Robertson, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're with Nate Robertson, who started the gum time tradition in June of 2006. Nate, you get drafted by the Marlins, you sign. What did you sign for? And talk about your minor league career.
Well, the you know, the signing bonuses were all quite relevant to the round that you were drafted in. And, you know, the big money, or the real money, was typically in the first or the second rounds of the draft. And so without getting into dollars and cents, I will, however, talk about what we made monthly.
Okay.
At the minor league level. And, you know, people they think that just because we play professional baseball that we make millions of dollars. Well, professional baseball includes the minor leagues. And in that first year in Utica, New York, where I first got assigned, I was making $850 a month. And keep in mind, this isn't for a 12-month period. This was only the time you were playing, not including spring training.
What other cities did you play in the minors?
Besides Utica, and most of my stops in the minor leagues were with the Marlins organization. I had one stop with the Tigers in Toledo, which was a great place to play ball. Great fans, great support there, great ballpark. And most of the places I did play in, they were pretty good baseball towns. Portland, Maine, Kane County, Cougars, which were in the Chicago area. Brevard County, which was in the Melbourne area and down in Florida. And am I missing any spots? Double A, I got Portland. So, and that included Utica, New York, which was my first stop in short season A. And it's an adjustment that you have to make. You know, you're not necessarily used to having that kind of demand put on put on your time and your career. And baseball was more seasonal when I was growing up. Well, at the professional level, it consumes quite a bit of time.
You got a special phone call on September 4th, 2002. Talk about that.
Well, it was actually my wife now, my fiance at the time, and I were driving back from Portland, Maine. The season had ended in Double A, and the initial wave of call-ups, they have a September call-up, you know, period where guys will get calls from the minor leagues that are on the 40-man roster and then get called up. Well, I wasn't on the 40-man roster initially. I had a pretty good year, and I was, you know, my hopes were that maybe I would get this call, and it didn't happen. There had been a couple guys that I actually played with that did get a call. So I'm driving home. We were going to make the straight drive back to Kansas from Portland, Maine. And Kristen was accompanying me, and it was about midnight, and we pulled over, and we were going to switch the driving session. She was going to take over for a little bit, and I was going to get a little rest while I checked my cell phone to see if I had any messages, and it flashed up because I'd turned it off. We had no service, and there was a phone call, a message left by their director of minor league operations with the Marlins. And so I had called him back to see what that was all about. And this is, you know, midnight, because it's like, why would the guy call? And he had called pretty late. So I call him back, and he informed me that I was going to the big leagues. And so we're in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia somewhere, between the West Virginia-Kentucky border, and my wife and I pull over on the side of the road, and that was the ultimate dream, getting to the big leagues. So we got out of the car, and like I said, it's about 12:30 in the morning, and we're jumping up and down and having a good old time. But probably one of the proudest moments was calling my dad shortly after that and telling him that, and it wasn't, I didn't say, Dad, I made it to the big leagues. It was a wee thing, because realizing along the way that it was more than me that got me there. And so that was a pretty awesome moment.
Your first start in the show was September 7th, 02. Share that with us.
Well, after the phone call, we continued to drive to Lexington, Kentucky, where I flew out, and Kristen continued to drive to Kansas to meet up with my family. Flew out to New York, where I met up with the team. And they had a game that night at Shea Stadium. And then after the game, typically is when you travel. We flew out that night, went into Pittsburgh, and 2 days later I made my major league debut and started. Family and friends, close ones, immediate family, and Kristen as well, all showed up, and just, I really don't remember much of it, to be honest with you. It happened so fast, and it's hard to just to grasp the moment, but it was a moment I'll never forget.
For years you dreamed about that goal, and then you attain it. Was it different than you thought?
Well, it was different in the sense that it was a dream realized, but it wasn't fulfilling, you know. You know, people, I think that sometimes, and in my case, I had a dream, and I thought that maybe when that dream was realized that it was going to be enough. And it just, it wasn't. It was a moment I'll never forget, but it wasn't enough. So it wasn't necessarily what I thought it was going to be, but it was amazing.
January 11th, 2003, you get traded from the Marlins to the Tigers. That was one day after you married Kristen. Talk about that experience.
Oh, that was an experience. When I asked her parents for their blessing to take their daughter's hand in marriage, I did explain to them, they weren't baseball people, so they didn't really understand that one day you could get a phone call and be in not only a different town with a different team, but another organization. So I tried to kind of lay this out to them, and they're Florida people, and I was with the Marlins, so it was like a nice little happy setup. They thought I would have this career in Florida, and their daughter would never have to go too far away from home. Well, we had a Friday night wedding on the 10th, and then the very next morning I got a call from both GMs, and it said that I was going up north to Detroit, of all places. And her parents didn't take that too well. Her mom actually ended up walking out of the room on me when we told her the next day.
How did Kristen take it?
Well, you know, she just she always just looked to me and trusted that, you know, not only that I would take care of, but ultimately that God would take care of our life together, and he wouldn't give us too much that we couldn't handle.
Being traded, what did it teach you?
Well, you know, ultimately, we're not in control. I could leave this studio today and my whole life could change if someone were to miss a red light, you know, and we're not in control. And so you have to realize that there's someone that's greater than you that is in control. And once you do that, then it makes transitions like that a lot easier.
We're talking to Nate Robertson. When we come back, we'll ask him about two career-threatening elbow injuries that changed his life. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Nate Robertson. Nate, in the minors, you had two career-threatening elbow surgeries. And because of that, you decided to surrender your career and your life to God. Why?
Well, you know, initially, you know, in my upbringing, which, you know, I give credit to my parents once again, that there was always not necessarily a strong push, but a need to know a relationship with God one-on-one on an individual basis. My dad always told me that that was a decision that I would have to make on my own, but also taught me the value in it all. And so when I was younger, when I was 13 years old, my dad actually got activated for Desert Storm. And, you know, I'm a young boy, kind of confused about life and, you know, not knowing if my dad had to go off and if he'd be safe, and really didn't know my place in the world, and decided that at that point in time that I needed something a little bit stronger and a stronger relationship, you know, outside of family. And the only place I could find that was through God. And so I had professed my faith when I was 13 years old, and that stuck with me, which was very big in, you know, helping me understand true surrender later on in life. Because when you surrender at a young age, you haven't really grown up into the world, and you don't know what the world can throw at you. And with me, I started to kind of get a selfish attitude towards my wants and desires. And in baseball, obviously, my livelihood is my arm. And in 97, actually, when I was at Wichita State, I blew it out for the first time. And here you are, you know, wondering why it happens, and everything that you were living for wasn't necessarily working out so well, you know, getting through that. And then my second elbow operation in 2000, I had to surrender everything that I thought was important and start focusing on what was.
We're talking to Nate Robertson. When we come back, we'll ask him, how does one learn how to do that? And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Nate Robertson. Nate, if there's a listener tonight that has been wanting to surrender his or her life to God, but they say, I don't know how to do it, what would you say?
Well, if they're at that place, then there's probably something going on in their life that there's a need for that, surrender, a need for God to take over and inspire them and give them hope. And really, in order to make that, there's nothing really complicated in making that decision. it's really just by, it's between you and God, and it's by word of mouth, it's profession. And really, you know, God knows the intent of your heart. You're not going to fool him. I mean, when you talk to God, it's not, you can't fool him. So he understands what's going on a personal level with each and every one of us. That's what I believe. And so he knows where you're at. And I saw you, and at that moment is when there is that surrender.
All right, a scenario. You're pitching in Yankee Stadium, 2-2, bottom of the ninth. You're facing Derek Jeter. 3-2 count, bases loaded. Pudge tells you to put one down and low. You put one right at the corner at the knees. It's a perfect pitch. Strike three. Instead, the umpire calls it a ball. You lose the game. Is that surrendering to God?
Well, I think that as long as perspective is in order, that you understand, and I understand, that there is no moment, no victory, no championship, no loss, no career. There's nothing that I'm greater than. There's no moment that I'm greater than. And at that very moment, that moment really isn't for my glory. If I'm doing things for my own glory, then I'm doing it for the wrong reason. And again, the intent of the heart is known. Maybe not by, you know, your best friend or your parents or anybody else, but God knows the intent of your heart. And if that's not a moment that he so chooses for me to experience in victory, well, then it wasn't for me. And as I look back, you know, there's things in my life that people, you know, you don't understand why they happen. But once you look back, you really see why you are where you're at. I understand why I'm here today. I understand that my career and where I'm at, living in Canton, Michigan, which if you would ask me that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that I'd have called you crazy. But it wouldn't have made sense. But it makes sense now. And maybe at that moment, I don't understand why. But I will one day as I look back.
I pray to God, Nate. I pray for things, but he never answers my prayers.
Well, again, sometimes that the prayer that you ask for isn't necessarily the best thing or best path that's for you in your life. And there's a lot of prayers that went unanswered with me as well. But now I know why. And maybe it wasn't that they went unanswered. Maybe it was that the answer was no, or wait, and I see why those things. There's answers that we think that will solve our problems, but there's a lot of the time those answers that we think will solve our problems don't.
The other day I was having lunch with a local poet, Angie Weaver, special lady, and she says, "When you're down to nothing, God is up to something." What does that say to you?
Well, I've learned that when you try to tell somebody that has what is perceived as everything, you know, big house, finances, 4 or 5 cars, all these things in the world, that if you tell them that they really do need God in their life, it's really hard for them to understand that. Maybe, I mean, sometimes it just seems like that's pretty difficult to translate that message to somebody. But it is when people feel like they have hit rock bottom or have nothing, is when that's when God can really do something in somebody's life, because there's no other way they can go, no other path that they can seek that is fulfilling to them. They need it from something greater than anything this world can offer them. And so that's what that poem really means to me, and it makes a lot of sense.
What's your favorite book?
Well, my favorite book is the Bible.
Come again?
The Bible. You know, it's something that again, inspired by my parents to hold on to and to hold close to, and if I were ever to seek wisdom or truth, to look in there. And the biggest thing that the Bible teaches me, you know, there's a lot of inspirational books out there and authors and things like that, but the Bible is truth, and it teaches me that this life is not about me. And once that we figure that out, that it's not about us, then that's when things work out pretty good.
What's your favorite chapter in that book?
I would say that my favorite book in the Bible is the book of James. And in chapter 1, it talks about trials and temptations that we must persevere through in order to allow God to complete a work in each and every one of us. And sometimes when we face these things, these trials in life and difficult times, that we feel like giving up or giving in, and we don't realize that God is just sharpening us as a person, as a whole person. And so it really inspires me, because everybody in this world goes through difficult times. But how do they get through it is the question. And through reading the Bible and God's Word, that's what helps me get through those times.
There's a listener out there tonight that's been thinking about making a change. And they're saying, well, how do I start? How do I start reading that book?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that one needs to do in seeking out where to begin and how to start, because it can be very overwhelming if you just pick it up and try to start from Genesis and go through Revelation. You can get lost really quick. But I think that that if that's a true desire of their heart, that God provides, there's somebody that you know, or somebody that they know that knows somebody that can help them along the way, come alongside them and be an accountability partner or be a mentor. And to me, that was, you know, when I was growing up, it was my father. And right now, you know, with my dad not being here, I still have, he's a phone call away, but there's people around here that I spend time with that are my mentor, and they hold me accountable, and they help inspire me as well. And I think the Bible is inspiration enough, but sometimes you have to have that accountability to stay in it.
Up until a couple of years ago, steroids were not banned within Major League Baseball. You didn't use them. A lot of major leaguers did, to give an extra little 2-3 miles an hour on that fastball, to swing that bat a little faster, to heal a little quicker. Why didn't you?
Well, I mean, you know, first off, I really stay away from the issue of what somebody else did and what I didn't, because, A, this is another subject where, you know, in my faults and inequities in my life, God looked at me with grace. And he's like saying, well, hey, you probably shouldn't be doing that, but he was patient with me. So I'm patient with others when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I stay out of the right and wrong issue, and I did and you didn't kind of thing. But it was a character issue, you know, for me, and that's why I chose not to.
We're talking to Nate Robertson, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Nate Robertson. And Nate, you got called up on August 16th, 2003, from Toledo to the Tigers. That team is in the middle or near the end of a winning 43 games and losing 119, within one loss of having the worst record in the history of any baseball team, even worse than any of my Cubs teams did. What? How did you and the team get through that season?
Well, we we tried to stay away from any hanging ropes. I say that jokingly.
What did your mother-in-law say about that season?
Oh man, yeah. Look where you guys went. You know, it was. You know, fortunately, I wasn't with the team, and I don't want to say that in a manner that I didn't experience what guys did from day one to day 180. I wasn't there the whole time. So, but I was there during the worst of times, because when I got there in August, you know, basically we were, it was in the papers that we were on pace and that we were threatening to break, you know, a very, very poor record, and one that we didn't want to have, you know, looming on us for the rest of our careers. And, you know, basically it was very difficult to get through it. You know, a lot of people are like, well, poor you, you know, you guys were struggling playing Major League Baseball. Well, it's relative. I mean, it was our jobs. It's what we had to do every single day. And plus what we do every day is in the media, you know, people were either a hero or a goat. And at the time we were a herd of goats, and we weren't doing too well. But, you know, there was a belief system that, you know, eventually the core of these guys, you know, we would be able to come through this. It was going to be a rebuilding process, and that eventually, you know, we would have our moment and our time. And, you know, coming off of 2006, it's kind of fun to reflect back and see where we were and where we are. And, again, you know, another moment in life where you don't really understand why things are happening, but you look back and then you understand that there's a process to get you there.
Steve Yzerman has said that the biggest thing Scotty Bowman taught him was mental toughness. How do you learn mental toughness?
Well, I believe that the one thing that people have to learn is they have to learn how to, especially in what we do, is you have to learn how to lose. You have to learn how to fail. You have to accept it, but learn from it. I'm not saying accept it in the sense that, well, you know, we lost again and ho-hum. I'm talking about having goals and obviously having the desire to be a champion, but understanding that champions fail. And if you can learn how to fail, that toughens, that sharpens you, because when a situation presents itself, then you're more prepared as to how to deal with it one way or the other. But you are prepared, and the key word is prepared. And I think that strengthens you mentally in what you do as an athlete.
What's the biggest thing that Jim Leland taught you?
Well, we talked about being prepared. Preparation is something that he had always harped on to us as a team and as individuals. Because the team doesn't function without individual preparation. And for us, it was being prepared no matter what happened out there on the field, with winning or losing. It was the preparation. And if you were prepared when you did take the field and after the game had been played, you understood that you did everything that you could to go out and compete that day.
2006 was a magical season for you, the team, for Southeast Michigan, for all of Michigan. Magical. Early in the season, Jim Leland called you out after a Cleveland Indian game, the last game of a home series. Do you remember that game?
Oh, I remember it well. It was a game that I started, and I didn't pitch very well, and I believe that you know, starting pitchers as a whole set a tone in the game. I mean, if you're in our skipper, Jim Leland, believes the same thing. He said, we're only as good as our next day starting pitcher. So there's a lot of pressure that you go out there with, but it's also part of the game. You have to understand how to deal with pressure, just like we talked about dealing with failure. And that day we didn't play like we were prepared. And, you know, that was a moment in which Leland decided that, you know, he had told people about who he was and his expectations, and not only as a manager but his expectations out of his players. And the one thing that he expects more than anything else was the preparation, and he felt like that was lacking there, and he decided to make his point. And the point was well taken that day.
Magical year. You make the playoffs, and you start game one in New York against the Yankees. You also started game one American League Championship Series in Oakland against the A's. And there were a lot of doubters. local press, national, why is Leland starting this guy? Did you hear those doubters, and what did you think about that?
Well, I think if you play long enough and you do what I do, you're going to hear doubters all the time, regardless of, you know, the situation. Obviously, that was the biggest situation that this organization has been in 19 years. And, again, that's part of how you deal with. To be successful, to be mentally tough, we talked about dealing with failure and preparation and dealing with success. And dealing with the media is another one. And again, what we do is in ink, you know, the day after, every day, people read about what we do and don't necessarily know who we are, but they read about what we do. And you're typically judged according to what you do out there on the field. So when I heard the doubters, and, you know, I just keep that in perspective and understand that there's opinions out there and they're entitled to that, and that's great. I just have to make sure that I go out and I don't make my manager look bad when he puts me out there for game one. So really for me, and, you know, in the ALCS and even in the World Series, I had two very solid starts, and I was just glad that, you know, I was able to go out and contribute in the postseason like that. And then, you know, at the end, opinions will always be around. Everybody's got them. So they can either form new ones or stick with their old ones and see what happens.
Who's the best player in baseball today?
Well, I'd say that the best all-around player that can, you know, can hurt you in so many different ways is, you know, to me it's got to be Derek Jeter. And it's really hard for me to say that. You know, it's tough to say Yankee is the best player, but in all honesty, the guy, you know, what he can do defensively, taking away hits from our guys, what he can do at the plate, because he can hurt you with power, he can hurt you in the gaps. He's an average hitter, power hitter, and by average I mean batting average. But he's probably the best all-around player in the game.
Last question, Nate. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, we talked about when I got called up to the Tigers back in 03, and the one thing that happened that day was I was flying out of Louisville, Kentucky, and I looked down and I was able to put, from the plane's eye view, I was able to put the whole stadium and the ring in my finger. I circled it. Within that circle of my finger, I could see the whole stadium, and it was a perspective that I saw from that plane. And so my thoughts were, with that kind of perspective, I need to have God's perspective in my life and understand how to keep things in order of importance. And to the young viewers, it's really just finding out what's important and putting it in perspective.
Thanks a million for coming. What I take away from this show tonight is, be true to yourself and have courage. You are a man of courage.
Thank you very much, Jack. Appreciate that.
Our guest next Sunday won 55 consecutive indoor hurdles races from 59 to 64. He won an Olympic gold medal in 64 in Tokyo. And his roommate in 1960 in the Rome Olympics was a young kid from Lovell, Kentucky, Cassius Clay. His name, Hayes Jones. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.